All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Thursday, everybody. Today is September 18th, 2025. And a top story this morning, once again, NVIDIA, once again, Intel. We've been talking about these two companies a lot lately. And, well, we got to talk about them at the same time here. Intel stock is ripping higher this morning, once again, on news that NVIDIA is buying a $5 billion stake in the company. They will be buying shares at $23.28 a share. Now, that's kind of interesting because that 23.28 number that NVIDIA is buying Intel shares at, that's a 7% discount to yesterday's closing price. And now the shares are trading around $32, $32.50. They're up like 30% this morning on this news. NVIDIA has already made like $2 billion on their investment in Intel just because of the reaction in the stock price. I mean, these guys are freaking printing money, aren't they? Now, what's the whole point here? What's Intel getting at? What is NVIDIA getting at? It looks like Intel is going to build their x86 CPUs for use in their AI servers. Now, that's kind of interesting. The x86 servers and the CPUs, maybe they're kind of like going a little bit after Dell, after Supermicro, maybe with that. And to be honest with you, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense because that is a razor thin margin business. Dell and Supermicro, they operate at very tight margins. Another player in that space is going to squeeze those margins even more. Maybe I'm misunderstanding what they're actually going to be building here, or maybe not. NVIDIA is also going to be building PC chips for personal computers. That's probably less important to NVIDIA's bottom line. No word about the potential foundry here. Remember, the big deal with Intel, the reason why the government took the stake in Intel and the reason why SoftBank is investing in Intel is they want to build a chip foundry, a chip fabrication facility here in the United States, because right now all of our chips are basically made in Taiwan. And of course, if things ever light off in the South China Sea, as we have some articles to that effect this morning, that's the first thing that they're going to blow up. And then, well, everything that goes boom in our arsenal needs those chips. So we need to be able to fabricate chips. Actually, the foundries pour the silicone here in the U.S. No word about that. Intel has had a hell of a time getting that foundry off the ground. We've had the CHIPS Act. We've tried throwing money at them. Then the government took a stake in them. And SoftBank is like, sure, here's a bunch of money we don't have thrown in that. And now NVIDIA is getting in on this. Will that foundry ever happen? I don't know. But this is certainly taking us a step closer here. Also big in the news this morning is our boys over at the Federal Reserve surprised nobody yesterday with their 25 basis point rate cut. So the rate cut, everybody expected that. There was some people were kind of holding out for 50 basis points. That was never realistic. But there was some interesting takeaways in the Fed press conference yesterday. Jerome Powell is clearly much more worried about the health of the labor market now than he is about inflation. And he spent a lot of time to that effect. First of all, he was asked about the downward revisions to the Bureau of Labor Statistics data, you know, the monthly downward revisions. And then, of course, the big downward revision, 911,000 jobs just disappeared as part of that annual benchmark revision. So, you know, Powell was kind of pressed on the strength of the labor market and saying in hindsight, it was never as strong as we said it was. Does that mean you should have acted sooner? He was kind of dodgy with his answers to those questions. Now, Powell also made reference to the labor market, talking about how the demand and the supply of labor are falling in tandem right now. That's kind of interesting because that's a reference to weak hiring, which we've seen, and also a reference to the crackdown on immigration. When he sees labor supply falling, they're talking about the immigration crackdown. Now, he was expressing uncertainty about which one of those forces was going to prevail. And again, he was, I don't want to say more hawkish or dovish. Powell was more bearish than I've ever seen, right? A hawk wants tighter monetary policy. A dove wants looser monetary policy. A dove wants more rate cuts, wants more money printing. A hawk wants, you know, like go back on the gold standard is your extreme hawk. Powell was a bear. Powell was like, the economy sucks. More bearish than I've ever seen him. He didn't outright say the economy sucks, but that's what he was alluding to. Now, he was asked about inflation and the trade war and tariffs. And he made several more references to looking through inflation, which is, by the way, the new transitory. Basically repeated what he said several times, that they are expecting goods inflation because of tariffs, that they think it's going to be a one-time step change in prices, and then it's going to stop. And so, you know, take all of that in as a whole, he's much more worried about the job market. Also, he mentioned AI a little bit. He was asked about that, and he said, we are starting to see some disruptions in the labor market due to artificial intelligence, notably among new hires, college graduates, entry-level white-collar workers being displaced. But hey, the good news is those same people are up to their eyeballs in credit card debt. Their credit scores are falling by record amounts. We'll put a pin in that. They can't afford houses, and now they can't find work. What a wonderful thing Wall Street and Silicon Valley have done when they got together and just absolutely destroyed the prospects for our youth. And then we wonder why it's so easy for them to radicalize. Maybe it's because they don't have any hope. I just throw it out there. Fix the money. Maybe some of these problems will go away. Coincidentally, the Bank of England also left interest rates unchanged this morning. We had their decision came out. They didn't lower or cut, and that's kind of interesting because they're projecting inflation to rise to 4% this year, but they still expect inflation to be transitory. It's been transitory for 4 years now. The Fed said they expect to hit their 2% target by 2028 yesterday. What's your rush? But again, people kind of looking through, ignoring inflation risks. Speaking of credit scores, we talked about that, about how the young people were hurt. Credit scores in the United States are falling at their fastest pace since the GFC right now, the fastest pace since 2009. The average U.S. credit rating fell by 2 points, according to FICO. That doesn't seem like a lot, but the last time the average credit score fell by more than 1 point was 2009. And the reason why it's falling is because delinquencies in auto loans, credit cards, and personal loans are at the highest rate seen since the GFC. In particular, credit scores among Gen Z are 39 points below the average for the rest of the country. Now, you'd expect younger people to have lower credit scores than their older counterparts, but not that much lower. All right, the prospects for Gen Z, they just really suck here. And of course, the biggest contributor to the rise in delinquencies for Gen Z is student loans, which we only now just started reporting recently. And that is expected to rise because a lot of people who have been delinquent on student loans for years still haven't been reported to the credit agencies. So things are going to get worse before they get better. We got Zuckerberg's $800 smart glasses don't work. The audience was laughing at his big hardware unveil yesterday, and he wasn't telling a joke. That's never a good sign. By the way, that is now the third iteration of smart glass. If you go by Google Glass and Apple Vision Pro and now Facebook's $800 smart glasses, why is big tech trying to force this product down the throats of consumers who clearly don't want it? You got me. Also, we got a lot of talk about drones this morning. Ukraine just hit two more Russian oil refineries overnight. That is, they hit 13 in August and now 5 so far in September. And these refineries were 800 kilometers inside Russia's territory. By the way, if you want to defend that deep inside your airspace, that's about a 2 million square kilometer radius that Russia would have to defend against these drones. Drone warfare is getting frightening, guys. It is having devastating effects on Russia's economy here, even though Russia is still gaining territory in Ukraine. Russia is now projecting their oil and gas revenue to fall by 23%. They're, of course, blaming the stronger ruble and lower prices, not the fact that their oil facilities are getting blown up. Poland and Ukraine are cutting a deal on drones. The Polish are going to manufacture drones using Ukrainian technology. Ukrainians are going to train the Polish military on how to use them. Obviously, in response or retaliation to that recent Russian drone incursion into Polish airspace. And Taiwan is getting in on the action this morning. They are buying drones and missiles from Anduril, along with five other U.S. and Canadian firms. The stuff that goes boom continues to prosper, sadly. We got Darden Restaurants' earnings came out. They actually didn't look that bad to me, but the stock is getting clobbered here, probably because Darden stock was up so much year to date. Initial jobless claims just came out a few minutes ago, and they basically got rid of all of the spike in jobless claims from last week. We talked about that earlier this week. They suspected that the spike in initial claims last week was due to unemployment claims fraud in Texas, centered around those floods. Well, that went away this morning. And we also have a very interesting story about Lloyd's. That is the big insurance firm in England. They are dumping commercial real estate debt using SRTs, which stands for either synthetic risk transfers or significant risk transfers, depending who you ask. But you'll never guess who they are synthetically or significantly transferring that risk to. Well, actually, you've probably guessed already. We all know where this is going. But we're going to warn people anyway, because every show we are going to warn people about what Wall Street is doing to their retirement portfolios. Stick around to the end of the show for that one, guys. Let's shrink my big melon of a head. We got a lot to talk about this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the algorithm if you feel so inclined. And, well, come on back tomorrow, because we do this one every day. Right now, markets are positive, but it looks like they are threatening to swing negative here. They were up sharply earlier this morning, and they have only started declining in the last half hour or so. But right now, the S&P is still 28 points in positive territory, or about 0.4% higher ahead of the opening bell. The Dow is up 15 points, but falling right now. Interesting. We had the dip buyers came in yesterday. There was initially a little bit of sell-off while Jay Powell was talking, and then as he focused on unemployment and the weakness in the economy, people started buying that dip, and now looks like the selling may be starting here. NASDAQ is up 202 points, 0.83% higher. That is almost certainly being driven by that news in Intel this morning. NVIDIA stock is up. Intel stock is up. The whole semi space is up on that announcement. So better performance from the NASDAQ than the other indexes. But even that one, giving up some of its gains in the last couple of minutes here. The DXY is a little bit higher this morning, 25 basis points at 97.28. The Dixie hit its low of the year in the moments following the Fed's announcement yesterday and then rallied as Jay Powell talked. So slightly stronger dollar this morning. Looking over at the bond market, look at that. Yields are higher. But wait, I thought they cut rates. And when you cut rates, aren't they supposed to go down? Pay attention, all you people who refied your mortgages. We got that data yesterday. Everybody who refied their mortgages into adjustable rate mortgages yesterday, just because the Fed's cutting doesn't mean your house payment's going to get lower. Interest rates are higher on the long end this morning. 30-year Treasury, 4.719. That's higher by 4.5 points. The 10-year yield is higher by 4 points at 4.117. The 2-year is up by almost 3 points at 3.574. And even the 1-month is higher, 2.5 points higher, 4.113. Interest rates going up this morning. Did not have that on my 2020s bingo card. Some interesting things happening in the metal space as well. Look at spot gold here, higher by 70 cents. But the New York price, the December gold future, is lower by $23. We're seeing that exchange for physical premium. The difference between the price in New York and London is starting to shrink here. Spot gold unchanged, but the December front month contract down by about 0.6%. Silver, same thing. We're seeing the spot price in London is up 15 cents or about 0.37%, 41.82 for spot silver. But the December silver futures contract is lower by 3 cents at 42.11. We're now seeing that exchange for physical premium is down to about 29, maybe 30 cents maybe. This was as high as 80 cents earlier this week. By the way, I spoke to Bob Coleman yesterday. We did an interview. We'll be running that one in a few hours later this afternoon. We did address those exchange for physical premiums. So come on back this afternoon for that one. Shout out to my friend Bob at Profits Plus ID on Twitter. We've also got copper is lower by 0.63%. Platinum is higher by 1.5%. Palladium is higher by about 0.4%. And crude oil is higher by about 8 cents here, 64.13 for October WTI futures. Bitcoin is having a good morning here, $117,436. That's higher by about a grand versus this time yesterday. Bitcoin was a little volatile yesterday after the Fed's announcement, but you'll notice if we zoom in a little bit here, that 50-day moving average, it has held now for a couple of days, a little bit of a retest and a move higher. That being said, I have started to trim my Bitcoin exposure in my IRA. I have one Bitcoin account where I just nibble a little bit every week and I never touch it, but I do trade it a little bit in my IRA. I have started to sell some of my Bitcoin positioning. I expect the onset of crypto winter pretty soon here, even though it's up this morning. The nonsense with these altcoin treasury companies is just getting so over the top pathetic that it's just a matter of time before there's some kind of a big deleveraging in the crypto space. But for now, we are higher. All right, let's talk about what the Fed did yesterday. What we're looking at here is the dot plot, or the summary of economic projections. Sometimes they refer to this as the SEP. By the way, shout out to James Bianco, who put this one out on Twitter. Thank you, James. This is an excellent chart. What you're seeing here is what they're projecting the interest rates to be at the end of the year. And, you know, each dot represents a member of the FOMC, non-voting members or voting members alike, and where they expect rates to be. Now, what we're looking at here in the middle, you've got nine members who are saying two more cuts this year. Basically, one cut in October, one cut in December, and then we're done. Another 50 points total. All right, you've got two other members who are saying we got one more cut this year. All right, and you got a couple of people who are saying we're done. This 25 points, you got what, a 2, 4, 7 members are saying we did our 25 bips and we're done from here. And check this out. We got one member actually saying we expect a hike before the end of the year. We got one hawk left on the Federal Reserve who's saying inflation is a bigger problem. It's nice of you to show up to work, whoever that lonely hawk is. And then all the way down here, look at this. That little guy? I wouldn't worry about that little guy. Yeah. You know who? I'll give you guys one guess who this is. And congratulations if you said Stephen Moran, Trump's new appointment to the FOMC. You're paying attention. This goes to show you what happens when political appointees are put in charge at the Federal Reserve. This is what you get. This is why, as President Trump yields more and more influence over the Federal Reserve, the price of gold has been rallying progressively, because they're putting doves in there, guys. You got one person expects interest rates to be cut by, what is this, like 100 basis points of cuts by the end of the year, 125 points. All right, Dovey. Meanwhile, let's see what the market actually expects. This is the CME Group's Fed Watch tool, which is telling us what they expect the Fed funds rate to be at the end of October. And we've got about 90% likelihood that we get one more cut in October, 10% chance of no cut in October. And then in December, you've got about a 73% chance of another cut in December after a cut in October. So that would be your third cut before the end of the year. 73% chance of that. 25% chance we get one more cut after this and we're done, and just a 2% chance that there are no more cuts this year. But take all this as a whole, guys. More cuts are coming, clearly. Probably two more, maybe one more. If the labor data starts to deteriorate further, maybe even more than that. By the way, the Bank of England has left rates unchanged at 4%. They keep a cautious stance on future rate cuts. And besides the takeaway that they didn't cut rates here, this is important all the way down, you know, towards the end of the article. The BOE expects inflation to hit 4% this month, a reading that is due to be released around 2 weeks before the MPC holds its November meeting. Officials are particularly worried about the spiraling cost of food, given its salience for consumers. Yeah, but it's not like food disproportionately affects the poor and the working class, right? I mean, why, you don't think rich people care that food's getting more expensive, do you? Of course not. That's only a problem for the plebs. Leave interest rates unchanged. And don't worry, they swear that at some point, inflation will return to their 2% target. Eventually, hopefully, maybe. Don't worry. It's still transitory. It's just been transitory for a really long time. All right, let's talk about NVIDIA. NVIDIA to invest $5 billion in Intel as part of AI and PC products collaboration. This one in the Wall Street Journal. The joint announcement sends Intel shares soaring in pre-market trading. We don't have a lot of detail about this yet, guys. They just announced it a few hours ago, but shares of Intel soared nearly 30% in pre-market trading Thursday after NVIDIA announced it would invest $5 billion in the chipmaker. NVIDIA said it's buying $5 billion in Intel's common stock at $23.28 a share. That's a 7% discount to yesterday's close, and would jointly develop data center and personal computing products. All right, they're going to jointly develop data centers. So, you know, once again, NVIDIA is giving money to their customers so their customers can build a data center. All right, round tripping. Who could have seen that coming? NVIDIA shares were up 3% in pre-market trading. Intel will build NVIDIA's custom x86 CPUs that NVIDIA will integrate into its AI infrastructure platforms, and will also build chip systems to be used in NVIDIA's chiplets that power PCs. So PC and AI markets. They're going to build CPUs. No mention of those all-important foundries. But look at Intel shares this morning. Let's refresh this because they have been all over the place. Up 28.7%. Trading at $32.03. That's up $7 here. Remember, NVIDIA's paying $23.38 a share. They're now trading at $32. So, I mean, NVIDIA's already up like 50% on this trade. Gotta love that one. People are saying, besides you got FOMO and you got piling in, people are saying this is going to drive Intel sales higher, that NVIDIA is going to be buying these x86 CPUs from them. It probably will. The question is, where are those sales going to come from? You know, I can't help but look at Supermicro and say this is probably going to take a chunk out of them, maybe Dell also, but for now, pretty much everybody is up on this news. And we got this one in money.com this morning. The average credit score just fell at fastest pace since the Great Recession. It's the best economy ever, and that's why nobody's paying their bills. In another indication of a puttering economy, the average credit score in the U.S. has fallen by 2 points since this time last year. The credit scoring firm FICO said Tuesday that the average credit score for all U.S. consumers is now 715, down from 717 logged in October of 2024. According to separately released FICO data, the decline marks the fifth time since 2009 during the Great Recession that the average FICO score has fallen by 2 points within 1 year. Look, guys, the FICO scores last year weren't real because we weren't reporting the fact that millions of people weren't paying their student loans. And there was this whole entire sector of the economy, buy now, pay later debt, that there was millions of delinquencies on, and that wasn't getting reported to the ratings agencies. So the credit scores have just been wrong this whole time. Now they're starting to get slightly less wrong and they're falling. This is just revealing what has been there all along. This isn't a sudden decline. FICO scores range from 300 to 850, and a score of 715 is considered to indicate good credit overall. But the 2-point decline in consumers' collective score is raising alarm bells. Each year, average credit scores tend to rise, sometimes by as much as 5 points. Any decline is rare, and 2-point declines are especially so. The reason behind the decline is more Americans are falling behind on many of their loan payments. Delinquency rates on auto loans, think Tricolor Auto, credit cards, and personal loans, think buy now, pay later, are at or near their highest levels since 2009, according to economist Amy Cruz Cutts in the FICO report. Also, Gen Z credit takes an outsized hit. It disproportionately affects the young, as most problems in the economy do. Just as Gen Zers are starting off their financial lives, their credit scores are getting clobbered. Born between 97 and 2012, Gen Z borrowers have an average credit score of 676. According to FICO, that is 39 points lower than the national average. While younger consumers' credit scores always tend to lag behind those of older consumers, the average score for these young borrowers also fell more than the others, too, dropping by 3 points since last year. Experts say missed federal student loan payments are largely to blame for falling scores now that delinquencies are being reported to credit bureaus again after a 5-year pause. And that's important, guys. This best economy ever, it was never that good. These people didn't just start missing their payments, right? That didn't just start this year. They just started reporting it this year. This problem has been there all along. These FICO scores were wrong the whole time. And we've been lending, making all these loans to people based on flawed data, kind of like our Fed has been making all kinds of decisions based on flawed inflation and flawed labor data. None of the instrumentation is working in our economy. And yet all the economists for years have told us how good everything is. And people who only read headlines and never read the fine print, never open up the attachments in any of the economic reports, were all like, oh, well, yeah, Bloomberg and CNBC told me the economy was great. I guess the economy's great. Turns out it was never that great. Meanwhile, this story is kind of funny. Mark Zuckerberg unveils $799 Meta Ray-Ban display glasses, the product nobody has been asking for, but we're going to get it anyway. Look, $800, it's better than the $3,000 price tag everybody laughed at with the Apple Vision Pro. And by the way, Apple Vision Pro sales, they should take off any day now, right? Certainly better than Google Glass, which never really took off. The one thing I want to take away from this, I'm going to scroll all the way down, and this video is going around on X. It's kind of hilarious. During the demo, Zuckerberg repeatedly attempted to call Meta tech chief Andrew Bosworth unsuccessfully. This is, you know what happens, Zuckerberg said, in the typical level of charisma that Mark Zuckerberg usually displays. Three times he tried to call the guy, three times it didn't work. $800 glasses that make phone calls that don't work. Yeah, when your audience laughs at you when you didn't make a joke, not a good sign. I really don't know why Meta's pushing this product. The only application I see for smart glasses is in the military, and maybe that's where Meta's ultimately going with this. But stockholders don't care. Right? Stock's actually up 0.2% this morning, $780. So it seems like nobody was really like had any high expectations for these smart glasses to begin with. All right, we got to talk about drones, guys. And I think this kind of goes hand in hand with that Meta story, because I think ultimately that's where Meta is going with the smart glasses, is drone warfare. Ukraine hits two Russian oil refineries as strikes intensify. This has been going on for about a month and a half now, and this is a very big deal because the Russians, who are supposed to have some of the best air defenses in the world, have been helpless to prevent this. Two Russian oil refineries were attacked on Thursday as Ukraine stepped up strikes on its enemy's energy infrastructure. Gazprom's Neftekim Salvat, don't hold me to these Russian pronunciations, petrochemical facility in the Pakoratistan, in the Stan region, was set on fire after being hit by drones, local governor, something else I can't pronounce, said. The site is more than 1,300 kilometers, 800 miles from territory under Ukraine's control, making it one of Kyiv's deepest strikes inside Russian territory. And guys, an 800-mile radius, that is almost a 2 million square mile area the Russians would have to defend against these drones to really shut down these attacks. There is no stopping these freaking things, guys. Modern air defenses are too big and too expensive to use to shoot down these drones, and we don't have an efficient and economical way to shoot them down. And everybody in the world is making these drones by the millions. Not looking good here. Since last month, Ukrainian military forces have intensified drone attacks on Russian energy infrastructure, including oil refineries, aiming to curb fuel supplies to the front lines. In August, at least 13 strikes were made, the largest monthly number since the start of the invasion in Ukraine. So far in September, there have been at least six attacks, and it is taking its toll, guys. We got this one this morning in Reuters, exclusive. Russia's September oil and gas budget revenue is seen falling by 23%. Now, you don't think Russia's energy and finance minister is going to admit the Ukrainian drones are having an effect, do you? Russia's state oil and gas sales in September are set to fall by around 23% from a year earlier on lower prices and a stronger ruble. Certainly not on the 13 plus 6, 19 drone attacks on oil refineries. That's according to Reuters calculations, hitting Moscow's biggest source of revenue. And guys, this is what the war in Ukraine has been reduced to right now. The Russians are continuing to take territory very slowly, crawling ahead a couple of feet a day. Meanwhile, Ukraine is striking deep in Russia's territory, punishing them economically. It's a war of attrition in Eastern Europe and Asia, something that you never want to find yourself in. And yet there we are. And drone warfare is spreading. Warsaw turns to Ukraine for drone warfare expertise as Russian drones incursion, or after Russia's drone incursion. Remember, it was over the weekend, 19 Russian drones invaded Polish airspace, what looked like a probe of NATO air defenses. They're saying it was an accident, or it wasn't an attack, or it was a probe, trust me. Poland is drawing on Ukraine's expertise in battle-tested drone warfare, establishing joint military training programs and manufacturing projects. Officials from Warsaw and Kyiv announced Thursday, just over a week after Russian drones entered Polish airspace and exposed NATO's vulnerability to a new generation of uncrewed systems. And it was just a few days ago we were talking about a new drone factory in England. Now we've got one in Poland. The Ukrainians are licensing this technology that they've developed. NATO is building it. They're probably going to hand these things right off to the Ukrainians. But NATO also needs these as well. And we've got this one as well. Taiwan spotlights Anduril drones and software in new arms deals. Taiwan is getting in on the spike in drone warfare. Taiwan will develop or buy weapons from six U.S. and Canadian companies that deepen its investment in autonomous systems, including Anduril Industries' Dive LD underwater drone. The pack announced Thursday by the National Chungshan Institute of Science and Technology in Taipei are meant to bolster the island's defenses in the face of China's growing military might. at a parade last month, the People's Liberation Army showed off myriad new weapons, including missiles and undersea drones. Anduril's Lattice software could be used to link swarms of uncrewed weapons, according to an Institute statement. Company founder Palmer Luckey visited the island this summer to deliver what he called truckloads of killer drones. The systems will have attack capabilities across land, sea, air, and underwater domains. Drones are taking over warfare in every possible theater. The Taiwanese are getting in on it. The Polish are getting in on it. The UK, Ukraine, Russia, China, everybody's building this stuff because it works really frighteningly well. All right, we got a couple more here. Swiss exports to the U.S. collapsed in the first month of 39% tariffs. This data just came out, and it's not just gold. That's the interesting thing about this article. The highest U.S. tariff among developed nations dealt a severe blow to Swiss exports there, according to the first reading since the 39% levy took effect. But increased shipments to other countries could offset some of the fallout. Foreign sales to America, excluding gold, adjusted for seasonal swings, were 22% lower in August than July. A 22% decline in exports in 1 month. They didn't just drop, guys. They fell off a cliff. That includes significantly fewer watch exports. Imports from the world's biggest economy, however, held steady. The U.S. trade deficit with Switzerland narrowed by roughly a third to 2.06 billion francs. That's about $2.6 billion, down from 2.93 billion francs in the previous month. So 1 month, a third of the trade deficit with Switzerland has been erased. Still a big deficit, but a lot smaller. August reading is the second lowest since 2020, according to Bloomberg's calculations, based on Swiss Customs Office data. Gold exports to the U.S. collapsed even more markedly, dropping 99% compared to July. Now, those gold exports, that was being driven almost entirely by the fact that investors in the U.S. thought there was going to be tariffs on gold bullion. And so we had that big drain of gold into the United States that we saw at the beginning of this year. That's the primary reason why we had that negative GDP print in the first quarter. Once we realized bullion was not going to be tariffed, that stopped, hence the 99% drop in exports of gold, which isn't really that important of a category anyway. But that is something I also talked about in my interview with Bob Coleman, which will be coming out later this afternoon. Meanwhile, Darden shares tumble after missing earnings and revenue estimates. Darden Restaurants, that's Olive Garden's parent company, shares fell 8.4% pre-market on Thursday after the Olive Garden parent reported fiscal first quarter earnings and revenue that missed analysts' expectations while maintaining guidance that barely meets consensus forecasts. The restaurant operator reported adjusted EPS of $1.97 for the quarter ended August 24th, falling short of the $2 analyst estimate. That was a pretty low, low expectations. When you miss low expectations, you're going to get punished. Revenue came in at $3 billion, below the consensus expectation of 3.04, despite increasing 10.4% compared to the same period last year. And I was shocked to see that number, a 10.4% increase in revenue at a restaurant chain. I'm really surprised. Now, obviously, a lot of that is going to be higher prices. Restaurant prices have been running like crazy. But I'm surprised to see people are actually paying it. A 10.4% increase in revenue was significant. And you can see it in their same store sales. Same restaurant sales increased 4.7% across Darden's portfolio, with Olive Garden posting a 5.9% gain and Longhorn Steakhouse rising 5.5%. Fine dining was the only segment to show weakness with a 0.2% decline, a rare sign of weakness in the luxury economy, which has held up pretty well as everybody else has been suffering. The company's other business segment, which now includes recently acquired Choice Tex-Mex restaurants, saw same restaurant sales increase 3.3%. I'll be honest, I thought these numbers were halfway decent for Darden restaurants, but the stock is now down 8.9, almost 9% on this news, probably because year to date, Darden restaurants was already up almost 12%. So it's basically flat on the year now after reporting these earnings. Look, the food away from home getting more expensive. Food costs are going up. Labor costs are going up. That's going to hurt restaurants in the long run. That weak guidance probably taking a chunk here as well. We also got jobless data this morning, and we talked earlier this week about this spike that we got last week about how the Texas Workforce Commission had said they thought it was due to fraud. Well, they went away. We had a 33,000 drop in initial jobless claims. Maybe it was fraud. Maybe that announcement last week really was fraud. So, you know, the good news is we're back to somewhat of a normal number on initial jobless claims. Initial jobless claims, that's basically people who just lost their job. Layoffs remain somewhat subdued, but the job market still sucks, which is why continuing claims, although trending down for a few weeks here, they remain elevated at 1.92 million, down slightly from 1.93 million last month. So, you know, I wouldn't say that this data is good that just came out, but it's a lot better than it was last week. So some silver lining there to the jobs data. And the last one we got to talk about, guys, this is a big one here. Lloyd's plans SRT deal tied to commercial real estate loans. And I've been warning about this. This is just another way Wall Street is conspiring to rip you off. Lloyd's Banking Group is selling significant risk transfers, or SRTs, linked to around 500 billion pounds or $681 million of commercial real estate loans, according to people familiar with the matter. The deal is part of the lender's Weatherby SRT program, the people said, who didn't want to be identified because the matter is private and they declined to comment because they don't want to talk about what they're doing to people's retirements. SRTs, you know, they're calling it a significant risk transfer. Sometimes they call it a synthetic risk transfer. They allow banks to insure loans against default by selling credit-linked notes to pensions, sovereign wealth, and hedge funds. And of course, pensions. There it is. That's where they always park this crap. Lenders use these transactions to boost their solvency ratios and free up capital they'd otherwise use to meet regulatory requirements. A bank usually obtains default protections between 5 and 15% of portfolios. In return, investors receive yields that could reach 10%. The global SRT market is set to expand 11% annually on average in the next 2 years. They're doing this more and more. All right, let's try to explain this as simple as possible. I'm a bank. I'm Lloyd's, and I've got all these commercial real estate loans, which are tied to these empty office buildings. They're not worth shit. Let's admit it, guys. These buildings ain't worth what we loaned against them. We've seen defaults are rising in commercial real estate. But I don't want to sell those loans and take the big loss because then I'd have to hurt the comps and everybody would realize these things aren't worth anything. So what do? I transfer the risk. I use the synthetic risk transfer. I find a pension fund who's going to deposit a whole bunch of money into escrow. And that's basically the money that they're going to lose if this loan goes south. And in exchange for that, I pay that pension fund a yield as high as 10% per year. Now, if you watched the show yesterday, you saw the article about how Chicago's pension funds are hopelessly underfunded, how they're desperate for yield. So this looks like a great way for a soon-to-be bankrupt pension fund to make up for a shortfall by chasing yield moving further out on the risk spectrum. But the rub comes, what if that loan defaults? Now, the loan still lives on the bank's books, but the risk doesn't. Remember that initial payment, that big chunk of cash that had to be put in escrow? If the loan defaults, then the bank keeps that money and the pension loses it. That is the risk transfer. It allows the bank to de-risk without selling the asset and admitting that it's undervalued, admitting that they're holding it at a bloated valuation. The risk moves to your retirement because your retirement desperately needs the yield because it's underfunded. And the market for these complex instruments is expected to grow 11% annually for the next 2 years. More and more people are doing this, guys. This is why I keep saying know what you own. Know what's going on in your retirement plan. Wall Street is ripping you off as we speak. Here's another one. Every day, there is another article to this effect. It's going to blow up sooner or later. And I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. Steve Woitis. Thank you, Steve, so much for the super chat, sir. I appreciate that. He says, learning about bonds, when you show the bond yields, are those percent rates the coupon you get when you buy the bond today? Yes, with an asterisk. I do believe that's what that is. Now, keep in mind, every bond has a different CUSIP number, right? It's a different product. You've got 10-year bonds that were issued 5 years ago, 10-year bonds that were issued, you know, 3 years ago. They're all different investments. But right now, if you were to buy a 10-year bond at the market offering at a new, you know, you go on, what is it, treasurydirect.gov or whatever, you're going to buy a 10-year bond. That's the yield you're going to get. So It is. There's all different ones and they vary. But basically what you're looking at when you see the yield curve, that is what a new issued 10-year note would be today if they issued it. And again, you know, when the interest rate changed, the price of the bond is going up or down in the opposite direction. So higher bond yields usually means the value of the bond has gone down. Lower bond yields means the value of the bond has gone up. Thank you, Steve. Good question, sir. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Millenheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm on the way out. Really helps the channel out. Thank you, Steve, for the super chat. And thank you to my magnanimous Millenheads on Patreon and YouTube for supporting the channel. Hey, look for that interview with Bob Coleman about gold, silver, and platinum coming out later today. Hi, Bob. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small, dream big.